The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Nay, motion is carried. Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 12:47 and we will finish at 1:47. I will now recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government likes saying it's time to do things differently. It's time to turn the page. It's time to get Nova Scotia's economy moving in the right direction, Mr. Speaker. After 3 years of the worst economic growth in Canada, after the loss of 3,400 full-time jobs, the second lowest wages in Canada, with more Nova Scotians unemployed now than during the recession, we couldn't agree more with the government, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government has failed to turn the economy around despite handing out hundreds of millions of dollars of corporate welfare. So my question to the Premier, why has this government failed to grow Nova Scotia's economy?
Yeah. Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as I pointed out yesterday when I tabled numerous headlines around the job growth that's taken place, there are 7,600 more people working today than there was when we came to power in June of 2009, Mr. Speaker. We have more companies coming to Nova Scotia. Just the example of more than almost 1,000 jobs committed to last week. Mr. Speaker, I want to table for the benefit of the Leader of the Opposition an editorial that appeared in the Winnipeg Free Press this morning, Mr. Speaker. This is what it says. In the span of 24 hours, Nova Scotia's NDP government inked low-cost deals that will add almost 1,000 high-paying, high-tech jobs, enhance technology training, and reduce the size of the provincial civil service. This is a competition that Manitoba, with its lower cost of living, central geographical location, and IT infrastructure, should never lose. Like Nova Scotia, we invest millions in the education of our children, only to see many of our best and brightest end up contributing to the growth of other jurisdictions' economies, Mr. Speaker. That is what other people in Canada know and understand about what's happening in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it's too bad Nova Scotians weren't boasting about this government at the rate they are in Winnipeg, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's not the people in Winnipeg, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's not the people in Winnipeg that are suffering under his 2% increase in the HST, Mr. Speaker. It's not the people of Winnipeg who are suffering under his 1,400 user fees that have increased, Mr. Speaker, under this Premier. And, Mr. Speaker, it's not the people of Winnipeg who are paying the NDP electricity tax, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, for some time, we've heard this Premier's line about the government's plan, about things coming to the future, Mr. Speaker, about the need for Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, just to wait for prosperity to show up, Mr. Speaker. They like this line so much they've used it quite frequently. On November 23, 2010, the Economic Development Minister said, and I quote, "It's time to do things differently. Jobs here outlines how we will innovate, compete, and learn our way to a brighter future for all Nova Scotians," end of quote. 2 years later, Mr. Speaker, all this government can do is point to a plan because there are more Nova Scotians unemployed now than during the recession. So my question to the Premier, why has this government created an economy that has produced more unemployed Nova Scotians than during the recession?
Premier.
Mr. Speaker, one thing is true, and that is that we have just come through, as the United States is, indeed as the world has, three of the most difficult recessionary years in our history. But you know what doesn't help, Mr. Speaker? What doesn't help is the kind of insult that is issued by people like the member from Dartmouth East. And what I would really like to know is whether or not the leader of the Liberal Party is going to ask the member for Dartmouth East to apologize for something that shows the manner in which the reckless inexperience of that member would actually drive companies out of this province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, what will drive people to the unemployment line is this government's high taxes, Mr. Speaker. Power rates increasing under 30%, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, if there's anyone who should apologize to the people of Nova Scotia, it's the Premier for misleading them during the last election, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government likes, Mr. Speaker, its plan so much it mentioned it again on November 23rd, 2011. Mr. Speaker, and I quote, "It is this government that is looking to the future. That is what we are doing here. We are creating the right environment to foster economic growth." And to quote, that same day, Mr. Speaker, the Economic Development Minister said, and I quote, "We have, and I as Minister, not only have faith in the Jobs Here strategy and the Jobs Here plan, but we also have faith and confidence in the good staff that we have who are implementing that," end of quote. Mr. Speaker, 3 years later, 3,400 full-time jobs lost, more people unemployed now than during the recession. And, Mr. Speaker, this government still can only reference its plan that has false promises it can offer to Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, and the promises don't take effect until after the next election. So, Mr. Speaker, the Premier can read newspapers, the Premier can flaunt part-time job gains if he likes, but this Premier cannot point to sustained economic growth. Why has his government failed to grow the economy and failed the people of Nova Scotia?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as I point out, we just came through three of the most difficult recessionary years in our history. But throughout that, Mr. Speaker, you only had to look yesterday at Nova Scotia and at Halifax, some 30 cranes over Halifax. First time in decades that that has happened. We have signed the largest industrial contract in the history of this province. $1 billion being invested in our offshore after years of decline, Mr. Speaker. All of this is work that results from the Jobs Here plan. And Mr. Speaker, I would point out that that is a plan that actually came from the private sector. It came from the business community, from community representatives. What I can take from this and the questions of the Leader of Opposition is that he endorses the position taken by the member for Dartmouth East. And if he stands up again, will he also agree and support the comments made by the member for Glace Bay that companies like IBM are minimally competent? More insults to people who are coming here to do work.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we learned yesterday that the Premier likes to govern by headlines, although I can't help but notice he sets a new record today by having to go all the way to Winnipeg to find a favorable headline for his government. Mr. Speaker, here's a headline from the Halifax Chronicle-Herald of today, and it is entitled, "Take Time Out on Muskrat Before We Go Over the Falls." What we know, Mr. and I will table that for the benefit of the House in a moment, Mr. Speaker. What we know, Mr. Speaker, is that the cost of Muskrat Falls has already gone up by 10% to $7.4 billion. We know the Premier has already said he expects the Nova Scotia portion to go up in cost as well. I will quote from this article, Mr. Speaker. It says, "The major factors impacting costs are yet to come. Escalating labor costs, renewal of collective agreements, inflation, which has been in check until now, and most important, interest during construction." So my question to the Premier, in light of this headline, will he now do the right thing, take a time out, and call for a completely independent review of the Muskrat Falls project before signing on the dotted line?
The Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I think only the leader of the Conservative Party could mistake a letter to the editor with a headline, Mr. Speaker. But I would just point out to him that right next to that letter to the editor was a second letter to the editor talking about the good sense of the Nova Scotia government with respect to a fully hedged energy portfolio and how that, in fact, is the right way to go.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Well, in fact, Mr. Speaker, I do have that second editorial with me, and I will table it for the benefit of the House, because it says something very interesting. It says that the cost of building a natural gas-fired electricity plant would leave Nova Scotians with electricity in the area of 5 or 6 cents per kilowatt hour. It also says that based on the new higher cost of Muskrat Falls, that it expects that Nova Scotians will be paying in the area of 14 cents a kilowatt hour, almost three times as much for power under Muskrat Falls as under natural gas. And so my question for the Premier, as I table the editorial that he so kindly pointed out, is will he call for a full and independent review of Muskrat Falls, including a comparison to all of the options available to Nova Scotians, including more natural gas?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I suppose that it's the opinion of the leader of the Conservative Party that you can just build Muskrat Falls at any time. It doesn't matter. You can just snap your fingers and it would be there. Well, that's simply not reality, Mr. Speaker. The simple fact of the matter is that in Nova Scotia, we have already moved up the percentage of our electricity generated by natural gas to some 20. By next year, it will be 25% of our portfolio, Mr. Speaker. The dangers and the foolhardiness of tying ourselves completely to any one fossil fuel has been proven over and over again. Mr. Speaker, we did it with oil. We did it with coal, Mr. Speaker. What we are putting ourselves in a position to do is to take advantage of stable long-term costs associated with hydroelectricity and to take advantage of natural gas, of the access to other electricity provided from other jurisdictions. Mr. Speaker, this is about taking control of our own energy destiny and making sure that the things that were caused by the errors made by the former Conservative government with respect to energy never happens again.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'll tell you what the opinion of the Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party is when it comes to energy. That is that Nova Scotians deserve the cheapest, most affordable green energy option available, not just the first one that the Premier falls in love with. That is my opinion, Mr. Speaker. This is a 50-year decision. It involves $7.5 billion of money, Mr. Speaker. It is going to result in electricity coming to Nova Scotia at an estimate of 14 cents a kilowatt hour. The CEO of Emera says that our power prices will go up by 2 to 3% a year for the rest of this decade because of Muskrat Falls. Well, the Premier may want to take the CEO of Emera's word for it, but Nova Scotians deserve more. And so my question to the Premier, if he's so sure that this is right, why does he refuse to put this project to a full and independent review compared to all the other options like more natural gas?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, a full review is going to take place. It's going to take place before the Utility and Review Board. But, Mr. Speaker, we have already seen the mistakes of the past. We have already seen the fantasies propagated by the Conservative Party with respect to energy policy. Just to give you an example, Mr. Speaker, we had over the past number of years the Sorry, I've lost my train of thought. I was just give me a sec. I was distracted. We had, as an example, Mr. Speaker, the decisions that were made by the former Conservative government that resulted in us tying ourselves to the international fossil fuel market. It is clear that that is a mistake. It would be a mistake if we did it again with natural gas, or for that matter, any fossil fuel. The right energy policy for Nova Scotia is to have a fully hedged, a fully flexible portfolio of energy so that we can ramp up or ramp down as prices for that energy changes.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. In September, the Premier travelled to China on a trade mission with a delegation of Canadian business leaders, bureaucrats, and other premiers. Now, trade missions are important, especially in the tough economic times like those the NDP have brought us here in Nova Scotia. There's no disputing that. But there's also no disputing the fact that politicians and public servants must respect taxpayers and their money. So, Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier is a simple one. Does he feel he respected taxpayers and their money on his trade mission to China?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, of course, the answer is absolutely. But what's more, Mr. Speaker, is that was not just a trade mission. I was there as the chair of the Council of the Federation with all of the other premiers from across the province. And we traveled not just with business leaders from Nova Scotia, but with business leaders from across the country. We met with the senior leadership, not only of the Chinese government, but in the business leadership throughout the areas in which we were fortunate enough to be. Mr. Speaker, as you know, China is a huge emerging market for all of Canada, and of course one that we need to be in.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I think people of all parties would be pleased that Nova Scotia was represented as the chair on that mission, but it really doesn't address the concern, which is, according to the Premier's expense claim, which I will file for that trip, his return airfare for that trade mission cost $7,135.50. According to aircanada.com, return airfare from Halifax to Beijing can be purchased for as low as $2,422, or about one-third of the Premier's flight. That's an economy class ticket, Mr. Speaker. The interesting thing is that according to that same document, which I will table, return airfare in first class can be purchased for $7,200, basically what the Premier spent. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier confirm that during this time of austerity, during a time of belt tightening, during a time of cuts to education and health care, that he flew first class to China on the taxpayer's dime?
Honourable the Premier.
You know, Mr. Speaker, it's just such a shame when you see somebody reduced to these kinds of questions. You know, the simple fact of the matter is, of course, we travel so that we're able to get up, go to work, are able, in fact, to be able to do the work that the people of Nova Scotia, and in this case, the people of Canada, expect from us. Yes, that's right.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I guess some of the other Nova Scotians who traveled in economy and some of the other premiers who traveled in economy will wonder what makes this premier so much more important. Mr. Speaker, the fact is, in the neighboring province of Prince Edward Island, New Brunswick, they were also on the same trade mission. Premier Allward of New Brunswick paid $5,389.35 for his airfare, and I'll table that. Premier Giz of Prince Edward Island, who I'm sure also would have liked to have slept and be ready for the meetings, Mr. Speaker, his airfare was $3,762.24. And in fact, Premier Giz's total expenses for the trip, including all food and accommodations, were $6,452, less than the Premier's airfare alone. Mr. Speaker, why does the Premier feel entitled to travel first class when his maritime counterparts and other premiers and business leaders felt that in this economy he should be traveling in economy class, and I'll table that again.
Honorable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I just consider this to be a continuation of the kind of embarrassing work that is done by the Leader of the Opposition and his inexperienced caucus. Simple fact of the matter is, we work hard on these trade missions, of course. In order to be able to respond to the demands that are there, we have to be ready and able to do that. I don't question the decisions that are made by other premiers. I'm sure they wouldn't question the decisions we made. But I was the leader of that mission. I was on every single one of those events. I was the one who had to be standing up, meeting the leadership in China, and working not just on behalf of the people of Nova Scotia, but on behalf of all of the other premiers as well. And I can tell you that one of the things that was most gratifying about that is almost without exception, every single premier on that trip came to me and thanked me for my leadership on that mission. I hope that satisfies the inquiry of the member for Dartmouth East.
The honourable member for Dartmouth East.
Well, Mr. Speaker.
New question.
It is a new question, yeah. Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm sure that the other premiers are happy that this premier thinks he's more important than others. I'm sure that when I go and talk, Mr. Speaker, I'm sure that when I go and tell parents who can't get an assistant for their child with special needs in the education system, or who are waiting for a hospital bed, you know, or we're paying higher tuition when the NDP came to power promising frozen tuitions, I'm sure that will make them feel a lot better. Mr. Speaker, that wasn't the only time, though. October 2011, there was another trade mission, this time to Israel. Maybe the Premier will like to explain why he was justified on this time. And I'll table this. Mr. Speaker, the Premier's return airfare on that trip was $7,506.03, $400 more, incidentally, than we paid to send him to China. And according to Air Canada, there were 20 different return flight options from Halifax to Tel Aviv, each and every one of them cheaper than the Premier's ticket. In fact, the most expensive first-class return flight to Israel available at the moment, or business class rather, is $4,540, which is $3,000 cheaper than the flight the Premier booked, which suggests the Premier actually didn't even book in business class, but booked in first class. Mr. Speaker, did the Premier fly first class to Israel on the taxpayer's dime while gutting the public education system?
Honourable the Premier.
As I said, I don't know where he thinks it gets him to go down this line, but, you know, if it makes him happy, I'm happy to reply. Simple fact is that when we came in, we never said that we would freeze tuition fees. It's something we did not say. No. Secondly, Mr. Speaker, we've invested more than $90 million in student aid and assistance over the last 3 years, more than any government in this history except for the advent of the student loan program. When we travel to represent the province of Nova Scotia, especially when you're talking about trips that take 15 and 20 hours, where you have to be able to get up and then go directly into meetings and to represent the province, of course, I think that there is an appropriate accommodation there of the travel needs of the leader of the province.
The honourable member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I still don't understand why this premier feels he needs to be treated and put on a pedestal that is different than other maritime premiers. I don't understand, and the premier hasn't answered that, why other premiers felt that it was not appropriate to travel business class, first class, yet this premier did. Listen, if the premier wanted to fly first class, that's fine. He could have paid for the upgrade himself. Mr. Speaker, and there were other Nova Scotians on many of these trips who also did not feel the need to fly first class. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier commit to refunding taxpayers of Nova Scotia the first class ticket to China and to Israel?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know what the what he's attempting to do except to try and demean the worthwhile nature of trips here to promote trade with the province. So, Mr. Speaker, the simple fact of the matter is that we worked very hard on behalf of the province. I'm very proud of the work that I did both to promote trade with Israel and to promote trade in China, to represent not only Nova Scotia but all of the provinces, all of the jurisdictions, all of those premiers. I make no apologies for it. I believe that the reasonableness. We don't set airfares. Of course, they are what is charged by the airlines. We are essentially price takers on that. We try to make sure that the representation that we have when we go to jurisdictions is as effective as possible, and that means being able to respond. Literally, when you first land.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, in my very first question, I acknowledged that the trips can be worthwhile and bring benefits. This isn't really about that. And, you know, Mr. Speaker, in 2001, the member for Timberley Prospect, the NDP member for Timberley Prospect, complained about the then Premier's $620 expense, which incidentally was an economy flight. In 2002, the current finance minister complained about a $3,700 flight by a deputy minister to lead a delegation. In 2000, the then NDP member for Sackville-Cobequid complained about a minister's $800 expense claim, saying, quote, "He's certainly not practicing what he preaches. I think the average Nova Scotian would see it as a bit of an excess," end quote. Mr. Speaker, it's a real simple question. They said one thing in opposition, and now the Premier's living by a whole different standard. What's changed?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure you know, if you go back far enough, you can probably dig up just about anything. That was, I think, 12 years ago that he's talking about. So, Mr. Speaker, simple fact of the matter is, and I remember when there were members of the Conservative government who would fly first class, and I understand when they fly business class on very, very long trips, because the simple fact of the matter is they have to be able to get up, they have to be able to work on behalf of the people right after they get there. This is not about vacations, Mr. Speaker. This is about business. And I have to say, it just shows more of the kind of inexperience on behalf of the member. I mean, I know, Mr. Speaker, that he's never had to negotiate a business deal. He's never had to represent people on a trade mission. I understand that, Mr. Speaker, but the reality is, we work very hard on behalf not only of the people of Nova Scotia, but of course on behalf of all of the companies that come along with us on these to ensure that they get the best value for the money that we spend.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question today is through to the Minister of Health. Today, the Northside General Emergency Room in North Sydney is closed, and I'll table that release. Might as well stand there for a second. Last night, the emergency room at Fisherman's Memorial Hospital in Lunenburg was closed. Tuesday and last Saturday night, the emergency room at Soldiers Memorial Hospital in Middleton was closed. And I also believe the hospital in Digby will be closed a whole slate of times over the next number of days. Listen, Mr. Speaker, the Premier made a commitment before he was elected to keep emergency rooms open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He's broken that promise to Nova Scotians. He said one thing to get elected and, of course, delivered something different. So my question to the Premier today, why did the Premier tell Nova Scotians he would keep the emergency rooms open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, it is true. It has taken a long time to clean up the mess that has been created by the former health ministers in the Conservative government. But here's the good news. In the collaborative emergency centres, where they have been open for comparative periods of time, we have taken emergency room closures from 2,100 hours down to below 50, Mr. Speaker. And the only reason it's at 50 is because those collaborative emergency centers are actually working through how staffing takes place, and we expect that they will be able to fall even lower than that. Who made the decisions on emergency care? When the member for Argyle was the Minister of Health? Security guards, Mr. Speaker. Security guards, because they were the ones directing people out of the emergency area over to other hospitals.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his first supplementary.
Well, I'm glad, Mr. Speaker, that the Premier is able to provide a statistic on how much closure we're having across the province, because to make matters worse, the Premier and the Minister are failing on the commitment. In 2009, they made it a law that would annually table an accountability report with the dates that all emergency rooms in the province were closed and, of course, the reasons, Mr. Speaker, for those closures. The last emergency room accountability report was tabled 18 months ago. That's a far cry from an annual report, Mr. Speaker. They know they broke their promise, and now they're trying to hide how badly they broke it. So my question to the Minister of Health, will the Minister table the 2012 emergency room accountability report before the end of the day?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank you for the health question. No question, I'm more than willing to stack up our results when it comes to emergency room closure compared to their results when they were in government, Mr. Speaker. I can tell you, and he could talk to his own leader, he could talk to former Minister of Health in the Liberal Party, he could talk to the leader of the Liberal Party. The changes we are making are improving access to care, it's keeping emergency rooms open, Mr. Speaker, and just as we said, we want to be accountable to Nova Scotians. We've brought in a law, we are producing the annual report, and as it's stated, Mr. Speaker, it's an annual report, and to my calendar, we're still in November. So we will be producing our annual report this year like we did last year, Mr. Speaker, something that the Conservatives didn't do when they were in government, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I always thought that 18 months is a little more than a year, but maybe I'm mistaken, as the Minister continues to allude that we're mistaken on many occasions. The Minister of Health, Mr. Speaker, while in opposition, said, I quote, and I'll table that answer too, I know and I don't know if the government realizes the impact of the emergency room closure has not only on the community, but an individual and their families in time of need, end of quote. He also said, I quote, I know when you have some medical emergencies like a heart attack, you can't wait an extra 45 minutes to go to the next town or go to the next ER that is open down the road, end of quote. Four emergency rooms were closed this week. My question to the minister, since he knows all so well how important ERs are to rural communities, why has this government failed to deliver on its promise to keep rural emergency rooms open 24/7?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm very proud of the work we've done over the last 3 years as government when it comes to health care, Mr. Speaker. And the member opposite, I think, read a great question from the former health critic, Mr. Speaker. And I was serious about it then, and we're serious about it now. That's why currently we have paramedics all across this province who can deliver clot-busting medications in the living room of someone's house, Mr. Speaker, in the bedrooms of someone's home, Mr. Speaker. We're continuing to ensure that health care providers can provide the emergency care to Nova Scotians. That's why we've opened collaborative emergency centres, Mr. Speaker. That's why we're allowing nurses, paramedics, physicians to work as a team, Mr. Speaker, to address the needs of communities. And, Mr. Speaker, these are rural communities. And I must add, Mr. Speaker, the four CECs that we have opened so far are all in opposition members' ridings, Mr. Speaker. They can just go and ask their communities how they appreciate the work this government has done.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our caucus has expressed privacy concerns on behalf of Nova Scotians. In response to these privacy concerns, the Economic Development Minister read and tabled from a promotional document related to this government's $100 million deal with IBM. This minister should be showing Nova Scotians a contract, not a piece of promotional material from the department. My question to the Minister of Economic Development, why did this minister not table the actual contract signed with IBM, and will he do so today?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's certainly my pleasure to rise on my feet and talk about the great work that our department has done in securing such great companies as IBM. You know, Mr. Speaker, it does nobody any good, and certainly does not do any good for Nova Scotians, for us to stand in this House, as we've already done, and criticize, and insult, and in ridicule companies like IBM. IBM, by building that global center here, Mr. Speaker, is going to have a huge impact, not only on Halifax, not only on Sydney, but on the entire province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this government offers assurances about our privacy, but it did not consult with our own privacy officer. We know that this government has had run-ins with the officer in the past. She is simply too independent for this government's taste, Mr. Speaker. Instead of going to an officer of the legislature, this government paid more than $30,000 to a private consultant to examine the contract. So my question to the minister, did this government hire a private consultant because it knew the privacy officer would take issue with the deal with IBM?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, IBM, 500 jobs, potentially $130 million, Mr. Speaker, in payrolls, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, when this deal is all completed, the IBM and projects, we made that nice announcement last week with projects and IBM that we will stand, Nova Scotians will stand, after incentives are paid, Mr. Speaker, a profit, tax revenue profit, $13 million. Mr. Speaker, every year that's what we will get. And why would we complain about that, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this government has not released the contract and it did not consult the government's privacy officer. Instead, the NDP hired a private consultant and bought the opinion they wanted. So my question again to the minister, this government tabled legislation that violated privacy law in the past. Why should we believe things will be any different with this IBM contract, and will this minister table the contract for the House?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what the member from Glace Bay should do is he should go and consult with his former employee, the University of Cape Breton, and see what they think about this deal, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, yesterday we learned that Mr. Speaker, yesterday we learned that the Bennington Group stepped away from the MV Minor salvage operation. And I'd like to read to you into the record the Chronicle Herald, Friday, October the 7th, 2011. Earlier in the day, the Premier said the province was considering towing the miner because of concerns over its potential impact on sensitive fishing grounds. The Premier said provincial officials were talking with federal officials about dealing with the vessel. He added that he doesn't want to jump to the end of the process, but it is possible the province could take on the job. Quote, you can do a proper salvage, you can do a proper tow, you can do all of those things, and none of them are being ruled out, end of quote. The Premier said.
Thank you.
Thursday morning's cabinet meeting. It is necessary for us to see this matter is dealt with in an expeditious way, as fashion as possible. He also said, it is a big word. It is. The Premier also went on to say, Mr. Speaker, and I quote, we're doing everything we can at this point.
That's pretty close.
Amazing. Amazing.
Is there a question working in there somewhere?
Order, please. The honorable member from Cape Breton West has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier went on to say, we're doing everything we can at this point to make our point to the federal government that let's deal with this now, and if we have to sort out who pays later on, then we need to do it. End of quote. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to know what has changed in the Premier's thoughts in the 1 year and 39 days since he made that. That's their problem.
Speaker, nothing has changed. And in fact, that's the unfortunate fact, except that the wreck is continuing to deteriorate. What I would ask of the member for Cape Breton West is that, you know, if he has any influence with his colleagues in the Conservative Party and the federal government, I would ask him to try and exercise that and ask them to live up to their responsibilities with respect to this matter and not ensure that his constituents have to suffer as a result of an erosion of the ability that the provincial government has to be able to provide service. This is the responsibility. It is an obligation that should rest with the federal government. We ask them to recognize that. And as I said before, we were not going to rule out any possibilities. We don't today. Simple fact of the matter is the wreck is now a wreck and you can't tow it. That's a simple fact. So, Mr. Speaker, if the member for Cape Breton West has any helpful advice, I would be pleased to hear it.
The honourable member for Cape Breton West on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, on the 7th of October, 2011, the Premier said, it was reported in the Chronicle Herald, meanwhile, the Nova Scotia government has arrested the great tug that was towing the vessel. A government spokeswoman confirmed the move several hours after Premier said he would make sure the stricken vessel is quickly removed if the current salvage operation gets bogged down. We are 404 days past that statement. The operation has got bogged down. What is the Premier going to do for the people of Manitou and surrounding areas?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we're going to continue to do what we've been doing, which is exercising due diligence on their behalf. We worked hard, the department worked hard, along with the federal officials to ensure that we provided the absolute best cooperation in getting the Bennington Group the kind of cooperation that they needed. Unfortunately, you know, the company, which incidentally is hired by the actual owner of the vessel, the member for Argyle says, how did that work? Well, the fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, didn't work. And we're all poorer off as a result of that. We would have liked to have seen them achieve their ends. But, Mr. Speaker, it is not the responsibility of the
Order. The Honourable Premier has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The member for Argyle wants to be argumentative just for the sake of being argumentative. No, so, Mr. Speaker, what we want to see is the matter dealt with in an appropriate manner. We want to see also the federal government take its appropriate responsibility for a situation that arose as a result of their inadequate action.
The honourable member for Cape Breton West on his final supplementary.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, I recall this government announcing they were going to fix some dikes in Truro that were on private land, and now we have a private vessel that's on their property and they don't want to do anything about it. Now, on October the 7th, the headline reads, Premier won't let shipwreck MV Minor become a permanent fixture off of Cape Breton. It goes on in the story later on to say, and I quote, this is the Premier, and I quote, I'm less concerned about who has jurisdiction for it and more concerned about the fact that it gets done because we have both an inherent responsibility to protect the fishing grounds from pollution and an inherent right to protect ourselves from these kinds of circumstances. It also goes on to say, Mr. Speaker, I don't want this to get mired in the question of who pays. Dexter said, I want to get it done, Mr. Speaker. 1 year, 39 days later, 404 days, why is this Premier not living up to his commitment to the people in the Manitou and surrounding area, all of Cape Breton?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the member for Cape Breton West can certainly read past press clippings. He doesn't seem to be able to read the ones from today. From today in the Chronicle Herald, Mr. Speaker, I will read what was said by Amanda McDougall, the coordinator of the Manitou Development Association.
That's enough.
We've been saying all along, again and again and again, that this wreck is the moral responsibility of the federal government. The province stepped up when it happened and tried to help, but now they have to come up with a plan that includes the federal government. Mr. Speaker, her group has sent countless letters to the federal government about their concerns without ever getting a response. Mr. Speaker, we're doing our job. Maybe that member over there could do his and help us get through to the federal government.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Seniors are finding it more and more difficult to make ends meet under this NDP government. While their incomes remain fixed, Mr. Speaker, the cost of living continues to climb. It's been reported that 1 in 13 seniors living in HRM are living in poverty, and I'll table that document. The most recent Hunger Count reports that over 7% of all food bank clients are over the age of 65, and I'll table that. Worst of all, Mr. Speaker, power rates have increased by 30% under the NDP. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister for Community Services please tell seniors in Nova Scotia why her government refuses to stand up to Nova Scotia Power and deny future rate increases?
The Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What we saw with the previous governments, both the former one and the former Liberal one, was that the burden that fell on seniors continued to increase. Under our government, Mr. Speaker, we took the HST off of home electricity, something that was opposed by the Liberal Party, in fact, campaigned against in the last election, Mr. Speaker. With the poor seniors in Nova Scotia, who under the Liberal Party was paying GIS, which was paying tax, income tax on GIS. I suppose you could look at it as a poor tax, Mr. Speaker. This government committed to repaying every cent that those seniors paid in income tax. And you know something, Mr. Speaker? We didn't just say it. We did it.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, during the UARB rate hearings held over the summer, Nova Scotia seniors looked to this government for leadership in standing up against Nova Scotia Power's future rate increases. Instead, this government remained silent, and Nova Scotia Power was given free rein to increase power rates for our most vulnerable citizens by 6% over the next 2 years. A letter sent to the Premier by the seniors of Halifax County Zone 15 states, we would like to request from you that there be no increases allowed for Nova Scotia Power. We have worked and retired to enjoy our lives, but we keep getting added taxes and increases we just can't afford, and I'll table that. Will the Minister of Community Services tell the members of this House why she, as Minister responsible for seniors, did not represent the concerns of Nova Scotian seniors at this summer's rate hearings?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, seniors in this province, many of them are entitled to receive the affordability tax credit. In fact, the affordability tax credit of some $255 per household goes to 240,000 households in this province, Mr. Speaker. The government of Nova Scotia is paying $70 million to make sure that those people who are in the most difficult circumstances have more real money in their hands, Mr. Speaker. I wonder if the member, when she next stands up, will confirm that what the Liberal Party intends to do is to shift the
the energy efficiency demand side management charge into the rate base of the shareholders, which would mean, and I hear the leader. Okay, no, I want to respond, but I can't.
Order.
I can't.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the leader of the Liberal Party says they're going to legislate it out to this. So, Mr. Speaker, I wonder if he understands even what the effect of that would be. The effect of that would be would effectively to arbitrarily reduce the rate of return to just over 6%. Yeah. Okay. Mr. Speaker. So. Good. Finally.
Order. I can't hear the answer. Honourable the Premier.
Finally, Mr. Speaker, we have an opportunity for the Liberal Party actually to take a position on energy, because that means that would be done by the Premier and by the Cabinet to legislate that, Mr. Speaker. If that is the policy of the Liberal Party, I'd like to have the member confirm that.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this government is pretty quick to hand out power breaks to big corporation, but refuses to stand up for seniors in this province. And Mr. Speaker, last week the Premier decided to give me a history lesson, which of course he was wrong about the facts. But let me just indicate to the House that the member of Halifax West also has a message for the Premier that he should remember what happened to every single one of those members who cut back in the 90s. They were all defeated, so you should remember that. Will the Minister for Community Services tell the 467 members of the seniors of Halifax County Zone 15 why this government can arrange lower power rates for corporations getting hefty checks from this government, but can't do it for senior citizens on fixed incomes?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'd be very proud to speak to the seniors group at their invitation, because the simple fact of the matter is that we reduced power rates by 8%, something the Liberals voted against. Mr. Speaker, we put in some to 240,000 households the affordability tax credit, $70 million commitment to many of those to seniors, Mr. Speaker. That is about reducing the cost for the lowest people, the lowest income people in this province.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Justice. This minister has resisted calls for a public process to aid healing and get to the bottom of what happened at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children. The Premier has also resisted those calls. But Professor Wayne McKay, like other experts, has made it clear, and I quote, I'll table this, there isn't a legal impediment to doing it now. He explained that a public process has a different purpose than criminal and civil court cases, and it can happen at the same time. So, Mr. Speaker, in light of what legal experts are now saying, why is this minister making these people wait for justice?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. This is a very delicate and sensitive issue for those that were directly affected. The Conservatives would lead you to believe that having the inquiry is the answer to be all. What we want to find out is allow the RCMP to do their job, which is obvious by the questions in the House over the last while, that member and the Conservatives do not support the RCMP. We also want to respect that there's a number of lawsuits going forward and that we want to get additional information. This matter has gone over a number of decades, and I should clearly point out for anyone that's listening, when the Conservatives were in power, they did absolutely zero on this matter, and this government is going to address this.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in an interview on CBC Information Morning today, Professor McKay referred to cases that show a public process to get to the bottom of what happened, and that they can happen at the same time as court proceedings. He repeated that court cases might not be over until 2020. Sadly, this means many of the people involved may no longer be living when their justice finally is served. How can the NDP make people wait to get answers, to get healing? We know how important it is. Hello. Mr. Speaker, despite what the Premier says, we know how important it is for people who have been abused as children to have the wrong that was done to them recognized. So, Mr. Speaker, I ask this minister, why is he making people wait to get answers so they can get healing and justice?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know the harm and dangers to children from being abused and violated. I personally investigated many of those cases. And so I am very passionate and concerned and committed. I want there to be no question whatsoever, that I am committed to any child that's been abused. I want to also go back to the CBC interview this morning, and Mr. McKay, and I listened to that this morning, and Mr. McKay was very clear that the Minister of Justice was within his right, within the practical part of this approach, to take the steps that I had the option to do that, and that practically you could look at that's a sound way to move forward. He was not suggesting for 1 minute to have the inquiry over everything else that could go on, but to weigh and measure the information and make a sound, constructive decision on how to proceed. Thank you.
Honourable the member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the victims of the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children want a government who takes action to help them. My final question is to the Premier. Will he take action so those connected with the tragic events at the home can get some answers, some healing, and some justice?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we should not confuse the public inquiry exercise with the exercises of justice. We should not do that. An inquiry is exactly that. It looks into broad circumstances. In fact, it can clear reputations, but it can also do great damage, Mr. McKay pointed out in his interview this morning. It can do great damage to people's reputations. So, in order to allow the actual wheels of justice to turn, allow people who are accused and the accusers to come before an independent arbiter and have their cases decided, in order to allow people to avail themselves to the due process of law in the civil courts, we allow these processes to take precedent, to take place first, so in fact people can receive the justice they desire.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. The NDP government continues to keep a multi-million dollar deal to buy land from Resolute Secret, while other important forestry organizations wait for meaningful long-term commitments. Program funding to organizations like the Nova Forest Alliance, Federation of Nova Scotia Woodlot Owners, and the Tobiatic Research Institute all wait for an answer from the minister on long-term funding. It seems if you aren't a multinational company, you don't get anything from the NDP. So, Mr. Speaker, will the minister tell this House if he's prepared to offer sustainable long-term funding to support these organizations?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. Certainly, we've been working with Resolute and Bowater and all those groups that were mentioned, the MTRI and the sawmillers, woodlot owners, and various stakeholders along the South Shore. We're all interested in sustainable development and in creating good jobs and protecting workers and their families and protecting communities, and we're have a number of good silvicultural programs that are designed to help the woodlot industry and build a healthy, sustainable, not only a forest, but also a forest industry.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't think any of those organizations will be happy with that answer because they're still waiting for answers on long-term funding commitments. You know, at best, This government provides them short-term funding until the end of the next year. And so it seems that if you represent an independent forestry workers or woodlot owners, your funding is year to year. But if you're IBM, Stern, or DSME, you can have an agreement that lasts a decade. You know, Mr. Speaker, these organizations generate more for every dollar invested than almost every single deal announced by the NDP, money that stays in the province and supports local communities and isn't shipped off to a corporate headquarters somewhere. So, Mr. Speaker, many of these organizations have now waited 3 years to hear from this government whether, and to respond to their proposals, which are on the minister's desk, to diversify and strengthen the industry, yet they still lack a commitment and, in many cases, an answer. So I will ask again, Mr. Speaker, I will ask again. You know, just today we were talking to a number of them who again pointed they are still waiting an answer for after 3 years. So, Mr. Speaker, is the minister prepared to offer sustainable, long-term funding to support these forestry organizations?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And we all know certainly that silviculture is a good investment. It's an investment in healthy, productive forests. As a woodlot owner, I know the value of spacing, of pre-commercial thinning, of replanting where necessary. And we have been investing in programs for the woodlot industry. In fact, just last year, we had over $2 million in silviculture programs for small and large woodlot owners. This year, we have increased that by about $1.2 million, so it's up to about $3.2 million now, the amount of silviculture investment in this province. We've had road programs, we've had certification programs. We're working with all of these woodlot organizations to provide a better forest industry and, again, to build a healthy forest industry and a sustainable forest industry, as well as a good, strong, healthy forest industry. So I believe we are doing the right things to make sustainable development in our forest industries throughout Nova Scotia, and we will continue to build on that as we move forward. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has expired. I will now recognize the Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage on an introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, with your permission, I'd like to make an introduction. Mr. Speaker, thank you. Mr. Speaker, in the East Gallery are two of our newest councillors to HRM Council, and with the indulgence of the House, I'd like to thank them for their offer to serve the public, congratulate them on their victory, and welcome them to the House. It's Mr. Steve Craig from Sackville and Way Mason from Peninsula South. Thank you.
We welcome all our guests to the gallery and hope they enjoy this afternoon's proceedings. I'll now recognize the Honourable Member for Argyle on an introduction.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce